Nobody takes an adult to Chuck E. Cheese or to the zoo. Nobody buys us ice cream when we did a good job in Hindi class or
in
Spanish class, right?
I think we got to start rewarding ourselves more, Dave. We're going to set our own goals. We get to go to the water park, all right? Yeah.
Give me an ice cream and most of the things would be done. One scoop is all I need. So, Julia.
Good morning, Deep. Good morning.
Hallelujah. I need a strong cup of coffee this morning. But good morning, Tiffany.
Good morning. So, today on our show, we have Julia Klein. She is a longtime friend of Olive and myself, and we met because she is the teacher of her very own German school in Chicago. She moved to the U.S., was an au pair for a while, ultimately decided that was the place to be. She had a grand moment where she made this decision. She'll tell us a little bit more about that in today's episode. Yeah, and I hope that it's really helpful for parents who are either raising their children with more than one language or who are interested in doing that. And she's going to bring us some great tips on how you foster these multiple languages and, you know, just how to help the kids enjoy it and make it fun.
And if I may add, Tiffany, to that, I think, you know, when I hear Olive speak German, it is incredible knowing the fact that for first 9 years, she grew up in a country with a single language. Like she's not, you know, bilingual. And it's a great testimony to Julia's stuff that she's been doing that when she came here, she was so quick to pick German. And I couldn't believe that, like how well she speaks. And so kudos to Julia, the work that she's done. And so there must be something. So I walked away with tons of information and knowledge from this episode.
Yeah, well, let's not waste any more time. Let's get right to it. Okay, so Julia, welcome to the show. Deep and I are really excited to have you here. This one has been a long time coming. You have been a part of Olive in my life for quite some time now. But before we jump into all of that, why don't you tell us and our listeners a little bit more about you?
Well, thank you. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. This is very, very exciting. And it's, in fact, my very first podcast. I have never done a podcast before. So here we go.
We're your first? I feel honored.
Yes. My podcast virginity. You're taking it away from me.
Yes.
And soon there'll be long streaks of it. So more to come, more to come.
Be gentle, yes. Don't scare me away. All right.
We'll do our best.
Yes. So my name is, I have many names, but most my students call me Frau Klein, and I love it. So even when I got married, I had to keep the Klein in there. So we can't lose Frau Klein. That would be horrible. So I have been a teacher, I would say, from very early on. I was born and grew up in a very small town somewhere in Germany. And very soon, I was the oldest. I was the oldest to my brother. My brother is 6 years younger, and all my cousins are younger than him. So I was always the zookeeper at the family parties. So that, and I enjoyed it.
And the entertainer, and the rule enforcer, and the leader. And the, yes, I'm also playing this role in my
storyteller.
Family.
That was always a big passion of mine. So it continued on that. When in that small town, there are only two things. You either play soccer or you attend a youth group at church. So the listeners can't see me, but I'm clearly not a soccer player. So I attended youth group to a point to when confirmation classes started, and they asked me if I wanted to help out at the Sunday school at our local church. And that was way more fun than sitting through boring sermons at the age of 13. So I was a Sunday school teacher starting at age 13. I've done it for 7 years. And after that, I picked up private tutoring students. And I say I have been a teacher ever since.
What were you teaching at 13?
Yes, I started, of course, with
the Word of God.
The Word of God, can't you tell?
Right.
No, for me, it was always the storytelling and, you know, having kids around me and having them be active, be engaged in something good. So it wasn't, the Word of God helped, but it was more the community. But also then later, I took up, like, I tutored German, math, later on English. So I have done that through all my school life. And later on, when I went to university, that paid my bills. So, yeah.
Right.
So what was the moment that made you take the leap to move to the U.S.? Like, how did all that happen? How did you end up becoming Frau Klein?
So that is actually, and maybe we will get endorsed, but that's my target moment. So after German high school, I spent 1 year in the United States as an au pair, which again is, you know, I don't want to say a cheaper nanny, but we were a cheap nanny. So I was an au pair in a family with four kids, and I still talk to them. We are still friends. So during my year in the U.S., I just loved this country. I love the U.S. just, you know, for people taking opportunities, which in Germany, people don't take opportunities. No. It's all about security. And it's all about, this is the way it has always been. Don't you try to stand out. Don't you try to just go for it. And I found that very impressive. So I spent my year here and I met a lot of people who did that, who had quite an impact on me. And it was the day before I had to leave. I did my last Target run and I stood there and I was like, oh.
Wait. Did you say Target?
Yes, I said Target.
Can like the
say-
store?
The store. That's what I mean with my, we can't say that.
No, we can say Target.
Oh, we can say that.
We can say whatever we want. It's our podcast.
They're just not sponsoring us. Yeah.
Not yet. Let Frau Klein do her magic. It will. Yeah.
This is one of the things that Olive and I continue to miss the most about the States. So I've never known this part of your story, but I imagine it has a big impact on you deciding, no, this is the place for me. It gives me that feeling. I totally understand. And this, I feel like all the pieces are coming together for me now, knowing you happen to be in a Target when this decision came.
It was like, I was at Target and I was in like their home section. And I thought, you know, everything was so pretty. I loved like the decoration stuff, like silly things. I loved the pillows, the picture frames and all that.
It was so good.
It is.
Really?
And back then, I mean, I have to put an age on me. That is like, we're talking about 20 something years back. Like in Germany, if you wanted picture frames, you had to go to a picture frame store. And like a picture frame would cost like a gazillion amount of money. But it was like the good German way, made in Germany, doing it. But like there was no fun in it, you know? And as a young girl or like young grown up, whatever, you want the fun. So at my Target moment, I was like, I wish I could stay here and live here. And I want to furnish my house and have my life in this country.
Furnish it with Target, by God.
So cheesy. But, you know, to a 21-year-old coming from Heartland, Germany, back from we're talking 1999, okay?
That
was the moment.
I stand firmly by you. I don't think it's cheesy. Having been an immigrant in this country for almost 2 years now, I consistently miss Target every day almost. It is in my bones. I'm not even in my 20s anymore. I'm going to own it. I'm going to take it.
We all are.
I love Target. I love Target. And if there's a way for us to get it here in Germany, I would bring it. I would do whatever it took. No judgment here.
They can bring the Domino's back from Germany to America. They should
take Domino's. We'll trade you. Yes. I think that's I'm good with this.
So I had this Target moment, and then I had to go back to Germany. I started studying at the university in Braunschweig. A great time. But for some reason, it was, again, like, you know, I call it destiny, call it God, call it the universe. I had a flyer in my mailbox to play the green card lottery. And I played the green card lottery. and I won the green card. that's why, like, that is here. Like, I won it, and I'm like, somebody wants me to be here. So I packed
it was meant to be, no?
Yeah. I took my two bags. I packed my two bags, and Air France flew me here. I started as an, I did the American way. I started as a nanny, and then I worked my way up through the daycare system. And then at some point, I'm like, I made enough connections in the German community that in the beginning, I tried to stay away from, but they found me and I found them. And anyway, so no, I made enough connections. And then at some point I said, you know what? Let's start the Kleine Deutschschule, which is my German language school. Back then, I thought that is the greatest name of all because it has my last name in it. It's a Deutsch and Schule in it. Till I had to,
and it's cute.
It is awesome. It's cute till the point that I had to spell it to the American people. All my German people knew how to spell it. There was no question. So when I started the bank account in that company name, and like, can you spell that for me, please? And
And you've spent the last several years just spelling out Kleine Deutschschule, haven't you? Mm-hmm.
So, but anyway, I love it. I still love it, meine kleine Deutschschule. It's been good to me. I've been good for Kleine Deutschschule, and Kleine Deutschschule has been very good to me.
So that happened soon after you went back to America, and you ended up setting up a school?
Well, I came back in 2007, and I nannied for a year, and then, I officially started October 19th, 2011, is when I started to go on my own, taking on my very first students, and yeah, so that's the official birth date of Kleine Deutschschule. So it took a good, 4 years to make that step.
You know, I have to say, you are one hell of an entrepreneur. I mean, this is part of why we became, I mean, we have a million reasons to be friends, I think. But something that has always impressed me so much about you is that you were able to always pivot. You have had a number of iterations of your school, and even with Corona, you found a way to successfully pivot yet again. So do you want to kind of walk us through like the different variations of your school and how it's been?
Sure, sure. So in the beginning, I did start out in people's homes. I sat at the kitchen table with the kids. I invited, like, it was either a one-on-one or if the whole family wanted to join, that's fine too. They had friends and neighbors. The more the merrier. As like, I come from my circus zoo animal background, so I can handle, I was always able to handle a crowd. End of 2011, I started, drove to people's homes. I built up a good group of customers. And then I believe, it was 2015 when I was thinking, you know, the numbers can go either way. I was debating with myself, do I want to open a center at my own school or do I want to keep doing this where I drive to the people's homes? And it was at a point, it could have worked. I could be a millionaire by now, just having other people do the job, or it doesn't work out the way I wanted to. But it was at a point where the numbers didn't give me the answer. Only the go for it spirit did. Just go ahead and try.
Jawohl.
And I found a beautiful location in Lakeview and I went for it.
And around this time or not long after is when we found you.
That is very true for summer camp.
Oh, yeah. It was summer camp.
It was summer camp.
Maybe we should hit that topic real quick. Yeah. So I actually met you through, Olive had a friend in her class whose family is from Germany. I think they're from Köln. Mm-hmm. And they, of course, knew about you because, I mean, in most, even big cities, like those communities within communities, they find each other. And so they knew about the Kleine Deutschschule and were going and really loved it. And that's when, I mean, Olive had met Sebastian. And so she was so interested in this whole German thing and really was motivated, wanted to be like a lot of, she went to a school in Chicago. All the kids were bilingual, most of them. And we didn't speak another language at home. And so Olive was always very interested in that. And I thought, yeah, okay, like, let's try. There was this summer camp, and Olive went to summer camp one day. And when I picked her up, first of all, Julie and I became like thick as thieves. Like, from that moment on, I was like, she my people. She's my people. And Olive just wouldn't shut up about her. I mean, she like had the best day. It was so fun. I was like, well, tell me what you learned. And as a kid, she was kind of like, well, I mean, a lot. And I was like, like what? And like, you can't put them on the spot, right? And so then like, as time would go, all these little things like, oh, well, I learned that with Frau Klein. And it was always like just kind of, you know, stumbling out. But at the end of it, she was always having so much fun. And what have we not learned, Deep, if not that kids learn through curiosity and interest? Point blank. This is how they learn. And you brought that. You brought that so well. And, you know, now Olive goes to a German Grundschule, and she had a lot of work to do once we were really immersed and in the country. But you really helped us lay those foundational bricks that brought her to where she is today.
And that is the most important thing, to build on that curiosity. You know, I can't, no teacher can have, especially young kids, sit there and say, okay, and next week we're going to write the German Abitur. Mm-hmm. It is all about repetition. It's about fun. And the most important thing is about them not shutting down. I had parents who were so like, I'm sorry to jump ahead, but their parents are like, oh yeah, I want my kid to learn German so it can go to a German university because German university is free. And I'm like, okay, do you speak any German? No. Any German is Oma and Opa German? No, we just want them to go to German university. And I'm sorry. Those are things that I cannot do. I can, you know, play the German music. We can play the German games. I can show you German clips and all that. So it's fun. Otherwise, if you're just sitting there, those kids, they just shut down. And anything German, I would just say hello. And they were like, no, I don't want to do German. This is not how learning works for nobody, especially not for children.
So this is such a perfect time because Deep and I and our listeners, a lot of us have kids who are being raised in multi-culti homes with more than one language. And of course, it's super cool and great to speak more than one language. But of course, it comes with challenges too. And so I was hoping that in the breath that you were just kind of in, how do we as parents encourage that? So when kids come home from school or kids come home from language class, or maybe, you know, they are in an English-speaking school, but parents speak Spanish at home, like, how do we do it? How do we keep them learning, growing, being really competent in two languages or more?
Sure. Well, first of all, two main rules. First of all, Rome was not built in one day either. So patience. Patience is a very good factor. You cannot expect that it's like, especially with summer camp or even my language classes, we sit there for 45 minutes or a day and the parents say, what did you learn today? Well, this is not how things work. Say something in German, or, you know, what is this in German? This is not how it works. We got to give them time to overcome hesitation, because learning a language, you are very vulnerable, especially children who are, or adults, everybody, every learner who's very vocal in their native language. They have to.
You mean like Olive?
Maybe. Have to step back, you know, 1 million steps, because you don't start with speaking those sentences that start here and end in 5 minutes. You know, you start with subject, predicate, object, if you're that far. Okay. So patience is the main thing. It's like, ask them what they liked about class. Like, what was a fun thing? Not like, don't put them on the spot.
That's such a good tip. Even in just like regular school, just to say like, what was fun
what
today?
Was fun.
Yeah, it's I picked up kids from after school, like I did after school German, and like just to break the ice, because they have to do another academic program, like, what is one fun thing you did in school today versus, and what is something you didn't like at all today? Something like that, just to break the ice and just have them start talking so you can listen. So Rome wasn't built in one day, as well as this is not a single student project. The whole family is involved in that. So if you are, you know, you can't tell your kid, oh, you need to learn Spanish. Like, we need to learn Spanish. You know, or German or French or whatever language it is. So I suggest, like, don't force it on them. Don't bring out another textbook. They have another textbook. Make it fun. You know, bring out a Duolingo app or whatever kid-friendly language app, or allow them to watch video clips, something on YouTube or a show, or play music. What I always suggest to any learner, children or adults, like, have a German hour or a Spanish hour, like, where for 1 hour, all of you just speak that target language. Cook something. Mm. Oh my gosh. Can you tell? We all love to eat.
The universal language, food.
It is. It's food. Or check out a grocery store of that ethnicity. You know, go, like, if you're not in Germany, go to a German grocery store, or go to a Polish market or anything. Just the fun stuff. Pick out the fun stuff. Listen to songs, to music. For us here in the U.S., oh, like, for everybody, the internet is a blessing and a curse. Now it's way easier to listen to worldwide radio stations. Have a German radio station in the background or a Spanish radio station. So you get to dive in. You get to immerse yourself completely without a textbook. You know, textbook come way later. That's for later.
How do you sense... Actually, there are two questions connected, but maybe let me ask this one. How do you sense when a kid is open to learning a new language or is ready for it? And what's the right age? I'm sure you get this all the time. What's the right age to kind of get a kid started in absolutely new foreign language?
The right age is when the parents are ready. That is it. I have students. I did, like, the baby classes, the mommy and me classes. Mm-hmm. I did toddler preschool classes. It's the consistency of giving them time with children, how adults always say, oh, it's so much easier for a child to learn a new language than for us adults. Why is that? Because the children language, the fields that they're talking about are much smaller. It's food, it's toys. It's like maybe animals. So you have a much smaller point to start with. You know, you don't have to have discussions of how to get an oil change. That comes later. So the younger they are, in that regard, it's easier because their native mother tongue is starting too. So to have it bilingual there, you know, it might seem easier, but I always say any age is a good age. Mm-hmm. One other thing, the family that Tiffany mentioned, they brought out a good point too, that when you start later, and with later, I mean elementary school age, if you want to have a kid bilingual, again, patience is the key, because if a kid grows up bilingually, it will take a certain amount of time that it is at the level that the children are, that the pairs are, that have only one language to master. You know, it will take, for our bilingual, trilingual children, it will take a while to catch up to be at that level that a single language speaker is. But once they're there, they got it. But, you know, the reading might be, or the writing might be a bit tougher for them. It just takes a little more patience, and don't give up. The worst thing you can do is they say, you know what, we're taking a break. If you're at that point, unfortunately, you're not picking up that textbook again.
Yeah, no, I think you said it right. And what connects with me really is the role of a parent and the patience on the parent's side. And, you know, it might be a generic question that I asked you, but it's weighing heavily on me because in our situation, my son he's six, and we've got three languages in the mix. So I speak English and Hindi with him. Mm-hmm. My wife is German, so and it's a German setup here, so he learns that very naturally. And in the beginning,
he goes to a German daycare, right?
The German daycare, German school, everything is German. So that's, you know, that's out of question. So, and English is our functional language at home. And for first couple of years, I was really enthusiastic about Hindi. I would talk to him really, you know, often, would make an effort on that. But then I think at some point in time, I realized I'm the only one doing it. And it's a really an alien language for him. So I just kind of started giving up, right? And it's funny that, you know, I get less and less reaction from him in that language. But what tricked me just now was we came back from Spain. We stayed there for 2 months and he just picked up Spanish just like that. Like, you know, he would hear people and he would ask me questions and he would be curious about it. He would ask me, you know, what does that mean? How could I say this? And he would never do that for Hindi. And I realized that, you know, when he gets a stimulus from around the people, it's a lot more easier. And parents, you know, as a parent, I don't have to take too much trouble to teach him that language. So yeah, you know, I think you're right. It's all about the patience and maybe the setup around you.
Mm-hmm. I have to say, like, for us, so like Olive had, I don't know, how long was she with you?
Two and a half years, if not three.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, she really had this foundation and interest and it was always fun. And then when we got here, it was like, it was different. Like there was a timeline and there was a goal. I mean, we did hang like a hamster in front of her. Like that was at the end zone. So like it still moved, right? But I think we also realized that this constant exposure and also the responsibility that was going to be on our shoulders. Clearly, no matter how hard I tried, like for a minute, Olive and I were like neck and neck in the German language like race. And then like I just woke up one day and I was like eating her dust. And now I just have like this little translator that mom has to take everywhere, right? And she was learning.
My story exactly till the age of 1.5, right? I knew more words than him.
You're just like, it's like the story being a parent. Like I thought I had longer. No, I didn't. I was like, the register's over here. And I'm like, how do you know that? And she's like, there's a giant, like, 20-foot sign on the wall, Mom. I was like, okay. One could assume that's what that meant. No, Mom, that's what it means. Like, all right, fine. Let's go.
And that is the only reason why I always say, in that regard, it is easier for children to learn another language because the parents can put, like, a reward on. Like, nobody takes an adult to Chuck E. Cheese or to the zoo. Or nobody buys us ice cream when we did a good job in Hindi class or in Spanish
that?
Class, right?
I think we got to start rewarding ourselves more, Dave. We're going to set our own goals. We get to go to the water park, all right? Yeah.
Absolutely. Give me an ice cream and most of the things would be done, right? One scoop is all I need.
That's right.
The amount that ice cream still continues to motivate me as an adult is... Yeah. I don't know.
It's hilarious. Yeah,
it's too much. It's too much, but it still works. Yeah, I mean, and so, I mean, a lot of the responsibility, or at least the perceived responsibility, was falling on my husband, Sebastian, right? Because he is the German native speaker. But in this family unit, like with Deep, we always spoke English. That was our, you know, language of communication. And so... Yeah, it was just really interesting, and he tried so hard to just stick in German and speak to her, and maybe she would respond back in English, but then eventually it would just, like, fall out. You easily switch, right? But what you said with the patience, like, now we're seeing it, and now, like, she was just on a week-long trip with her whole class, and after 1 week or one weekend with, like, her German friends, she's coming home and just the German is just, like, rocketing out of her face, and I'm like, whoa, slow down, what happened? And they laugh, and I'm like, hey, tell me what happened. I want to laugh. But yeah, so you're probably right. All great tips. So something else that Deep and I always love chatting about, because we just have like a hodgepodge of cultures. You know, he is from India. He's super familiar with like the Western world. Obviously, we live in Germany. You spent time in the States, Deep. Like, where were you? I always forget. Texas?
No, California. Yeah.
California. Those two states are wildly not the same. So I don't know why.
You just picked the two states where you find most Indians. So you had 50% chances.
Did I? I didn't even know that. That's perfect.
You had 50% of the chance, Tiff.
But yeah. You know, stats, languages, like you guys are hitting all my strong points today. Anyway, back to what I was saying, hodgepodge of cultures. So like he's got Indian, his wife is German, we've got German in our house, we're American too, like all of these different cultures. And so like naturally when there's a sometimes, I don't know, culture clash, or like we're the parents and we're raising kids the way that, you know, we are used to. And I think, I mean, of course, when you put your own culture or your own methods up next to another one, all of a sudden you start like asking yourself, like, wait, why do I do that? Why do we? Okay, no, that makes sense. I mean, sometimes I'm like, no, that's dumb. That's not for us. But there are so many times where I look at it and go like, wow, there's something to that. And Julia, you and I have talked about the idea of the helicopter parent. And I'm so curious to hear, like, having grown up and like teaching here in Germany and then moving to the States. I mean, they're vastly different cultures, even though they're both Western. Yeah, what are your thoughts on that? And what are some of the cultural differences that you notice?
Well, the very first big thing that I noticed is when I was first in the U.S. and worked as a nanny, I dared to give American kids leftover birthday cake for breakfast. Where she was like, I don't know why I still sit here alive. I don't know that I didn't get killed yet.
And they still talk to you, huh?
I hate to. Yeah, right.
I'm sure you rebounded nicely. Oh,
that was like the thing. It's like Germans are very relaxed about certain things, but not other. So the phenomenon of the helicopter parent who wants to know. I had like parents. It was a preschool class, and they sat there the whole class, like sitting in the back. Jumping on the kids when I said, like, okay, so this is grün, and like, go after me. And the kid wouldn't repeat after me within 2 seconds. The parent would jump into there and like, say it, you don't have to say it. And I'm like, gee, give that kid time to breathe. Let me do my magic. That's my magic.
Yeah, this part's my job. This part's my job. I got it.
It is, yeah, this is something I had to get used to. That technically, also the many discussions with parents I had of how to teach and what to teach. That was very interesting. This is where I had to step back to coming from, you know, from the, and it's a time difference too, from the 80s, 90s, where the teacher was always right. And if something did go wrong, it was my fault, the student's fault, versus now it's the teacher's fault. So I had many interesting discussions. Why didn't I do this? And why? How did I do that? How did I dare to do that? And it's like here, parents, you know, a child is an investment, I guess. Also, like a like what we call a prestige object to show around. My kid is doing this. My kid is doing that. When in the aftermath, your kid is a kid that needs to be a kid. I think many, I don't know if this is a Chicago phenomenon, but many people, I would say with Americans, just let the kids be kids, explore the subject matter. And this is not only languages, but anything in life. And you're not protecting your child if you sit or hover like in a helicopter. If you hover over your child the whole time, you don't give it time to process. You don't give it space to breathe. This is like the biggest encounter I come across when it came dealing with American people.
You know, since I've moved here, and something, this is like a feeling that I have internally now that I wish I could bestow upon all the American moms, because I feel like here there is just a broader sense of shit happens, accidents happen, like, oh, kid got hurt, oh, kid got hurt. And in America, there is this sense of responsibility that, first off, it's the parents. But when they say parents, they're not ridiculing dads. They're ridiculing moms. And mothers are supposed, if anything happens, why did that happen? That shouldn't have happened. That was the mom's fault because the mom wasn't there. The mom wasn't looking. The mom slipped away. The mom had to work. It was her fault. It was her fault. And because so many moms feel judged, I feel like they just go spreading that around. Well, I have to be perfect. She has to be perfect. And now we're calling the cops when there's a kid playing on the playground instead of mothering and saying, hey, I see this kid's alone. Let me just keep an eye, make sure they're safe. Seems fine to me. And here, I mean, I've not only seen olive blossom, but I too have gotten to blossom, because instead of feeling the weight of this entire responsibility and all these expectations, and that my entire life, being, time, energy, all should be devoted completely to my child or children, it's just not that way here. And kids carry a lot more responsibility. And I've seen olive bloom under these circumstances. And that's something I really wish that I could just like give to moms in America. And I do think that there is like a small movement of them who are trying, but it's definitely not the majority, and they're going against the flow. So it's harder. There's friction.
And I highly agree, Tiffany. And I think German, or kids growing up in Germany, especially Olive's age, are freer. You know, they are free to go to school by themselves and come home by themselves. They are free to ride the bus, the public transportation, to ride their bikes, to go somewhere. In America, this is a complete disaster. I think, what is the land till the age of 13, I think?
In Illinois, your child, in the state of Illinois, and it's different state by state, but in the state of Illinois, your child may not be home alone. It's, I want to say 13. They may not be home alone. Yeah. No, Deep, you can't go to the store. You can't go grab milk. You can't go grab Robitussin. Screw you.
Oh, goodness.
No.
There have been times I've just walked to supermarket for 20 minutes, 30 minutes at a stretch, leaving 6-year-old.
Mm-hmm. And the same thing.
Are kids going to Kita on their own? I'm sure it's close by. Kita is daycare for non-German speaking listeners. Yeah, I see little kids that are, 4 or 5. And it's just, there's more of a expectation on, I think, adults in society to make sure they are safe and good, but also on children.
Yeah.
That they know how to conduct themselves, that they know how to do things. And in the States, nobody could ever scold your child. That is a big no-no. No strangers scolding other people's children. To an extent, I certainly get it. But here, that's totally okay. If your kid's kind of being a shithead on the train, then an adult will say, like, hey, knock it off. That's not how we do it. In the States, I don't know, the police would get called and there would be a Facebook post and it would get shared all across the country. Like,
there was this case where the mom let her kids go home from the playground, where it was basically just a straight line. People called the authorities on her. She had to fight that. And we're not talking about, you know, like our grandparents had to go for days and miles through snow and storm. It was a block or two from the playground to the house. So it was like a 5-10 minute walk, and people called the authorities on her, and she had to battle in court that she won't lose custody of her children for child neglect. And like here in the, it's so funny, since Tiffany is the American in Berlin and she says here, it means Germany. And I say here and it means the United States. It's just weird. But anyway, here it always has to be somebody's fault. Like something happens. Mm-hmm. It's this whole,
and it's preventable. Everything is preventable.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to be sued.
Somebody has to be sued. And like I had this where a kid fell, just trampled over its own feet and fell and got hurt. And I got like very nasty calls and I got threatened to be sued for my existence. And it's just like nobody. And the good thing is that is good that nobody pushed that kid. But this kid was all by, there was no story that kid would have made up. So the kid was all by itself. And it happened to me too. I broke my foot falling over my own toes. I didn't sue anyone. But all of a sudden, bad parent. I think people are, what you were saying, not just mom shaming. People are just afraid to be considered bad parents, that they put all that on them. And like somebody has to be responsible. Somebody has to be blamed other than themselves. It's just, it's a strange, it's a different world here.
Yeah. And, Julia knew this because she is from Germany. So she's experienced this. I'd only read about it or seen different, kinds of movements. And so it was so cool to meet her and somebody who like thought a little bit like me. And it was like, you're really a minority you're really a minority when you say, no, I want my child to be independent. I want them to learn to do things for themselves. That makes you a good parent. And that's a minority situation.
When it comes to, you know, learning a language or teaching a language, I have a feeling, or in my opinion, I think it's exactly the opposite in the US versus Germany. I feel that the US is a bit more forgiving to the foreigners when it comes to, or to kids, to, you know, to when it comes to learning English. It's given that you're coming from a new country and you have a, you're from a different background and you may not be able to speak the same way. So you're not as corrected as much. But in Germany, I found that the conditions are unforgiving. You know, you have to be able to speak in a certain way, in a certain style, and be very accurate and correct when you speak something. What's your take on that, Frau Klein, if I may ask, in terms of, in terms of teaching language strictly? Yeah.
Well, coming from a German background, I can say German parents are not the most, I don't know if they, if you can say if they're not the most patient ones, but they want to see results. And like, school is work for children. That's why they have to, you know, that's expected of them to sit down and show results, because that's what you do in the workforce, you show results. Another interesting point that I get to is, that's what I tell my American, especially adult students. It's like, yeah, I went to Germany, but nobody spoke German to me. They all spoke English to me, even though when I asked them to. And that is another cultural thing, is this is rooted in us. How should I describe that? Deep down, if we are all, we all have learned English in school. So if I speak German to a native English speaker or native or someone who speaks English, shows a weakness that I don't know that. So I, it's not out of disrespect that I'm not doing it. It's just, you need to know English because you learned that. So we can't put this one aside. It's so hard for us to speak our own native language to people who want to learn that, because we would admit, oh, I can't speak English to you because I don't know it, because I didn't succeed in school. I wasn't good enough. So no matter how crappy the English is, no matter how much you beg adults to speak German to you, they switch into English just like that.
I experience this so often, and that gives me a brand new perspective on it. I really, I mean, and Deepa, I bet you too, when you, sometimes as a language learner, you're like, oh, I'm so motivated. Oh, today I'm going to run all the errands and I'm going to communicate in German. I got excited today because I ordered a drink and then it came and I did it in German. I was like, yes, like achieved, right? Yeah. And then every time in Berlin, I think it's very common because it's such an international place, but I will really work up the gall to speak German and to be motivated and to try and to have a good attitude and to not feel like I mess up. And they, it's like they hear my thick accent in my head. This is what's happening. They're hearing my accent. They're hearing my terrible grammar. They can barely understand me. And so they're switching to English. And this is always the thing that's like rolling around in my head. Like, oh my God, I'm so bad that they refuse to speak German to me.
Yeah, yeah. It's not you.
No, I think that's a nice perspective switch. And even if it's not true, I'm going to run with that. I think it feels better. Deep, what about you? How's your German? Like, where are you at? And do you use it? Like,
I get by. I can have a conversation. No, actually, I'm kidding. I should be a bit more, you know, gracious to myself. And, you know, I think I can hold a good conversation in German. I'm always still shy a little bit. But, and that's the other thing which I was thinking about, Tiffany, as you were talking about, you know, the cultural differences and going back to even Julia's point of, you know, not having any expectations or being playful with the language. In Germany,
are you and I two people who don't have expectations for ourselves?
Well, I don't know. I'm sure you do, but, you know, I don't know. But, you know, in Germany, it's always been, you got to perform, you know, I'm here as a, I have to be a responsible dad, as a father, you know, I need to show up as a responsible husband as well.
Those sound
show
like up to expectations. Work,
right? It's a lot of expectations, right? And and that kind of, I don't think I the German blossomed in that conditions, as opposed to, you know the story, Tiffany, when I was in Brazil, traveling through 6 months, I didn't take any lessons. I had no expectations whatsoever. I was just having fun and I was being playful. And I learned the language just as easily or even better, right? So I feel, you know, my mind goes back to that playfulness and creativity part and losing that expectation as a parent, even towards your child when it comes to learning a language.
And, so, and many people underestimate the power of games. They think of games as something we do in our free time, that it's just something that's not been taken seriously. Games for children and adults are such an important factor to learn a language, because, especially with adults. I love bringing my bingo. I love bringing my memories or my top trump cards with them, just because as an adult, more than a child, you don't want to lose. You're not thinking about, am I saying it right? You're thinking, is this the right card to play? Is this it? Yeah. So then you're what you were saying, the hesitation as an adult is way bigger than of a child, although I've got to get back to that in a second.
Yeah.
So even with games for adults, like if that brings out so much talking and it is so much fun and so important just to break down this barrier, this hesitation. And I'm sorry to go back to the children. We also have to see a child goes through different stages and how it is developed. At a young age, it wants to please the parent. So it's very easy to, Zach is auf Deutsch or something. It will do that. And it will just please the parent and do like a little parrot. We'll do whatever you want. Then a little later, it's in a stage where it doesn't want to stand out, where it wants to fit in with its friends. And if all the friends are English speakers or German speakers, you know, to like, you say to your kid, say it in this language, they don't want to do it just because they are embarrassed. They don't want to be different from their friends. And this is it comes and goes in waves. And you can't say, it's from age 4 to 5. Every child is different. You guys have children. I don't have to tell you that. Every child is different. But you have to be aware that the whole psychological development is also a big part of language development. If it's willing to say so, or, you know, if it's at a point where it doesn't want to be outstanding out, where it doesn't want to be different. My tip here is acknowledge it, but don't step back. Keep speaking the language of your choice. Keep it, because it's still there. It just give your child, again, patience. Give the child the time at its own time to go, you know, to be ready to do it.
Beautiful. Love that. For some of our listeners who are craving for, you know, the tidbits, the actionable ones, or the hacks, is there any tools, is there any specific games, any specific apps that you recommend that would be useful for language learning?
Sure. Like, especially for German, like, we have so many great games. Like, as I said, a bingo game, I don't know what your target audience is, but like if you want to teach German, like you can do accusative and dative with any kind of bingo game. There is, I know that Duolingo, and I know there's Babbel app and Rosetta Stone, but Duolingo now also has a program for kids that is especially designed for kids.
Ah.
So I don't know about the other two. They are all the same. It's all the same concept, you know, and I say with these programs, it's seriously fun if you say, like, during a car ride or like 10, 20 minutes of, you know, you can play, can have screen time and do something here. It's not enough for children to develop vocabulary of their own. It's just what I like, the muscle memory. And I'm not sure if you have musical children or like are into sports, but the drills that you do in sports as well as in music learning, you do it again and again and again, that your muscle is doing it at some point by itself. That goes the same way for language learning. And this is what these programs are good for. You know, at some point you're not like, do I need to use the dative or do I need to use the accusative? But you know exactly, since you've done it so often, your muscles know what to do. And this is what those computer programs are, or, you know, the apps are good for. And other than that, I mean, you know, if you have a memory game, you can go with, you know, ist das ein Fisch, das ist kein Fisch. So there's so much language in all these kinds of games. And especially the bingo, you know, I always made fun of when I saw American movies and I saw the old lady sitting at the bingo places. I would love to sit at a bingo place.
They're out there like spending their rent.
I had classes. Tiffany knows that. We were playing bingo for 45 minutes. It goes through, ich habe die Karte mit dem Mantel, ich habe den Fisch.
Dude, she got me too. I didn't even know I was learning. I did not even know. I was like, oh, we're done. But I didn't even, oh, wait.
Effortless.
Hey. And then
that's effortless learning. Yeah.
So all these things.
So, Julia, there's one more topic I would love to touch on because I would be so remiss if we didn't talk about this. You are a true lover. Brothers? Yes. You are a true lover and connoisseur of the Brothers Grimm. As an adult, when I started like really dissecting some of these stories, I was like, that's like terrifying. like we really had just like a different method back then, yeah. Right? Just scare the hell out of them, like, so they won't do it. Just fear factor, right? And that was something that I noticed. And then I had chatted with you just a little bit about it, and you're like, oh, well, I have a whole blog about it. And I was like, what? What?
Yeah, I have to read it.
Julia knows all the stories and breaks them down and gave me the insight, like the real deal on like what it really means. And when we're reading this to kids, like really what they were trying to instill. And my mind was blown. So, Julia, you got to hit my friend deep with some of this
knowledge. I am curious. I am so curious about that.
So Brothers Grimm. So there is the Brothers Grimm who collected the story. So not even they have the true form of fairy tale. We most of us grew up with the Disney versions of Cinderella, of Sleeping Beauty, of Snow White. Mm-hmm. That's not necessarily the Grimm's. So for the Grimm's, you have to know that these stories were first of all collected, not written by them. And they were designed for adults. It wasn't actually most of the fairy tales were like evening entertainment. Like people didn't have Navy CSI. They didn't have Lost or any of those Netflix. There was no Netflix back then. So that was to keep the adults entertained. What? And what I found most intriguing, how we think that, you know, we are so progressive and we know it all. These stories are quite full of sex. It's like, and there are codes in there where I'm like mind blowing. It was mind opening. So for example, when you do the Princess and the Frog, I don't know if you might have to do a rating, a warning for your audience.
No, always say this podcast is for parents, not children. So if you as a parent decide to let your kid listen to this, that's on you. I'm not raising your kids, just my own. Thanks.
So if you do the Frog Prince, so first of all, in most, like in the Disney version or in many versions, it's about for that princess who made that promise to the frog. If the frog gets the ball, I don't know if you're familiar with that story, but it's about a princess who sits by the well, plays with a little golden ball, and then it falls in the water. And a frog comes and says, you have to grant me 3 wishes and I'll get your ball back. And she says, I'll do it. So in the Grimm story, so she takes the ball and like, see ya, runs away, runs home to the castle, see her father. And the frog follows her and he knocks and he says, well, I'm here and you promised me 3 wishes and let's do it. And she's like, oh boy. And the father said, well, if you promise it, you got to do it. So the first wish is that he can come in. The second wish is that he can have dinner with her. And the third wish is that he can lay in bed with her. Yeah. Sleep, yeah. So the American is naughty, naughty. She kisses him and he turns into that prince. That's not how the Grimms go. The Grimm story is she takes, like, he hops in the bed with her. She takes the frog and smashes it against the wall. And then the frog turns into the prince. So what do we make out of that? So if we are very mature adults.
What do we make out of that?
We're very mature adults. The frog is a symbol for male genitalia. And like as an unmarried woman, especially of noble standing, you don't take just any kind of male genitalia in your bed. You don't do that.
Any kind of frog.
You don't do that. So by the point that she took it and threw it out, she held her status as being a noble, honest woman. And that's how she can find her prince and get married and live happily ever after.
Father's grave.
Dave, you know I'm cringing over here, right? You know I'm cringing. I'm like,
so
we read this to children.
The funny thing is, that's the only, at that point, you know, that's a story we all hear as children. And like later on, when I go through this thick book, and like every time there's a frog, you can be for it all makes sense if you look at it not as a animal, but as its true meaning of a male genitalia. It makes perfect sense. So it's not necessarily the sex that got me, but I find it very interesting. Also, in the same thing with teaching, it always depends on the adult. Like if an adult tells you a story in fear, like, oh, I shouldn't be telling you that, and oh, this is terrible, then the child will, you know, the child
picks
up the emotion. Not, I mean, of course, the words to what you're saying, but more the emotion, and oh, this is something bad, and I have to be afraid of that. And,
yep.
And another good story, as you were saying, Tiffany, how it's so grim, there's Bechtemann, I forgot his name, but he was saying, A child can stand all the evil in the world, like whatever bad happens. But in the end, something even worse has to happen to that evildoer. So if we have a bad guy who kidnaps the grandma, or if we have the bad wolf who eats the grandma, who eats Red Riding Hood, you know, something even worse than that has to happen to them. And then the child is fine. That's like, not what happens in the real world today, unfortunately, not in many cases. But in fairy tale psychology, as long as something worse happens, if there's the right punishment for an evil doing, then a child is okay with that.
I'm just thinking about the like generations and generations of American girls and young women who were taught you have to kiss a lot of frogs until you meet a prince.
No,
girls, ladies, knock that shit off. You don't have to. You don't. That's not what they meant. That's not what they meant.
Nobody kiss a frog, please.
The lesson for me is I have to be very selective of what fairy tales I tell Janosch now.
Maybe tell him in Hindi. Yeah.
In my mind, it'll still play the same. Once I've heard it.
Once you have this, revelation, you can never tell stories again the way
you do. Oh, well, Julia, this has been absolutely wonderful. It's been such a pleasure to catch up with you. I'm so glad that you and Deep got to meet each other.
Yes, I agree.
This was fantastic.
Yeah. Absolutely. And it all started with a target moment, this whole journey.
The target moment started with
this episode and life brought to you by Target. Target, are you listening? Yeah, are you listening?
Give us money. No, but like there was a target moment.
But
thank you so much, Julia.
Thank you for having me. All right. Bye-bye.
Hey, guys. We hope you're enjoying the show. If you haven't already, head over to reroutingpod.com and sign up for the newsletter. Subscribers receive exclusive updates from Deep and I are the first to know when there's a new episode out. That's reroutingpod.com. Enter your email and we'll make sure you don't miss a thing.